on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Friday, October 25th, 2024 edition, and appreciate you all tuning in for this final show this week. Hope everyone is ready for, I think it's kind of hot, it's kind of Halloween weekend, right? I know there's a lot of Halloween parties going around, and hopefully you all make it to one and have your costumes ready. But before we get to all of that, we are going to touch on today's market as well as some overarching themes that are important to cover in today's ever-changing economic landscape. And we are only about a week and a half away from the election, so certainly that will be on everyone's mind. But most importantly, this is really about setting your frame of mind so you can make better decisions with your money consistently. So you're thinking about things the right way. You're not chasing yield. You're not chasing returns. You're using logic instead of narratives and emotions, which are very common and easy default. You know, that's how we are as humans. We are emotional beings. And unfortunately, that means our natural inclination is to actually make bad decisions, especially in the investment world. And so this is about resetting your mindset so that you can come from a place of logic and facts and focus on the world that is, not the world that you wish it to be, for example, especially in these contentious political times, right? And so that's what this show is about. And we do that mainly by answering your finance and investment questions, but we also bring educational topics to the table so that you can bring them back to your own situation and, once again, make better decisions. Now, in just a bit, we will go and talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we will answer this caller question first.
Hey, guys. Kyle from Texas here. Calling about BECN, Beacon Roofing Supply. I've had them on a watch list here for about a year or so. It's up 25-30%. Fundamentals look good from what I can tell. Let me know what you guys think. Love the show. Appreciate it.
All right. Looking at Beacon Roofing Supply. They should be roofing and related building materials through 533 branches in 50 states. And interesting one, because earnings do tend to be pretty up and down. Now, they made a lot of money during COVID, $5.20 in 2021, $6.71 in 2022. That's up from $1.95 back in 2019, pre-pandemic. Now, earnings did fall pretty dramatically, down to 71 cents last year, but supposed to rebound up to 7.24 this year. So my question, you know, was there, looks like last third quarter was kind of a kitchen sink quarter where they lost a bunch of money, and that's kind of dragged earnings down then. And but let's take a look at some better metrics. You know, earnings, you can mess with a lot, but free cash flow, that is a little clearer, and that still tends to be pretty volatile. It went into negative territory in the first quarter of 2022, went all the way up to $836 million trailing 12 months in the second quarter of last year. And now we're back down to $115 million right now. This is a market cap of only $5.7 billion. So it's in the mid-cap space. And they do have a good amount of debt, about $3 billion in debt. So that worries me just a bit. Let's take a look at the chart here, because I think that's going to be very instructive to see what the market is thinking about this rebound in earnings. Now, it's been kind of trending sideways as of late. They are buying back some shares. I do like that. So they're using some of that cash flow for that. No dividend really to speak of. Return equity 20%. I think that's solid. But historically, the average is closer to the high single digits. And so I worry that it's over-earning and that it's not really going to rebound quite as much as the market is expecting. And the technicals are too kind of neutral to, frankly, slightly bearish, especially the after the move down in late July. It hasn't really recovered that. And that is a short-term bearish signal. The MACD is relatively weak. So I don't like the debt level. I don't feel confident that earnings will rebound as strongly as the market is expecting. And in fact, already those analysts are downgrading those numbers. So overall, I just think there's much better places to allocate your capital right now. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot to cover over the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about how to set up an effective allowance system for your children. An allowance can help children learn about saving, spending, budgeting, and essential money management skills. So we'll cover that topic. Also, we'll dive into a few more. Higher interest rates are supposed to kill multiples in the stock market, but that hasn't happened yet. So I want to talk about that and look at what could potentially bring multiples back down. And then also bank earnings. Bank earnings have come out. And what is that telling us about the consumer? Okay, we'll also get to the voice bank questions on Social Security withdrawals and Civitas, as well as questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll look at today's market activity and play more questions for you here on Invest Talk. Sid from North Carolina, hang on, you will be next. So give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important. But so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the Invest Talk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls. Let's
go. If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
Looks like we got a live call.
Call Invest Talk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk now with 59 million downloads. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel.
Let's go take a live call. Sid from North Carolina looking at HCA. And you own it or looking to buy it?
Hi, Justin. Good evening. Thank you for your time. No, I don't have this in my portfolio. Mm-hmm. In fact, I looked at it's down around 8% today, but I was just watching the numbers the way you and Luke are teaching. So I thought probably few numbers looks good. I don't have a software, so all I have to rely on the free data and Yahoo. But I thought that if you feel this is a good entry point, or we should wait for some more down for this one. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Thanks for the call. Now looking at HCA Healthcare, and what they do is they own a bunch of acute care hospitals. They're out of Nashville. And they have 188 hospitals, 123 freestanding outpatient surgery centers, and physician offices as well, urgent care clinics, et cetera. And, you know, it's a large company now, about nearly $1 billion market cap. They have a lot of debt on their balance sheet, $40 billion here. And obviously, I have to dig into this earnings report, but the market didn't really like it. Like you said, down nearly 9% on the day. Let me see if I can get a more clear. Yeah, they beat estimates. Yeah, it looks like they missed on guidance. And so that's really the issue here. And it was, you know, kind of priced for perfection. Now, I like that. I like what you're looking at because I like the space. They have good profitability, 14% return on invested capital, which is very, very solid. The issue here is that this move, after a long rally, you go from all the way in beginning, beginning of COVID, bottom of COVID was at 78. The last major pivot was around 225. That was back in October of last year, so about a year ago. And now it peaked around 415, and now we're at 363 today. Let me give you a support level. Just running a trend line, running some fibs. Yeah, see, I probably wouldn't buy this till about 280. I think that's the support level. Yeah, between 280 and 290, I'd say 295, that's the area that I would pick it up. I think there's all, when you have a big reversal candle like today from a high on volume, that means the market, it wants to go lower. It wants to go through a corrective period. And that's what I think you are likely headed for. So maybe sell a put option, you know, back around 275. I think that would be probably a good option here for HCA. So I like the company. I just don't love the chart after today. And I think that you're going to go through a period where those expectations of growth are starting to come in a little bit. And that ultimately kills or at least reduces the multiple that it's trading at. And that's why I think you'll get down to that sub $300 level. And I wouldn't touch it until then. Okay. Thanks for the call. And I hope you're telling your friends and family members that our Invest Talk audio podcast is available in video form over on our YouTube channel as well. And we receive finance and investment questions submitted via the comment section over there. So let's get to one of those right now. Randy23 says, would love to get your opinion on Avnet, AVT. Thank you. Well, thank you for the comment. Now, this is Avnet AVT, and it is about a $4.7 billion market cap, so right in the mid-cap space. Earnings have been coming down, though. $8 earned in 2023, fiscal year 2024. This is one of those names that probably, I think their fiscal year end is into Q3. And that was $5.34, okay? But earnings supposed to fall again after falling 34%. This last year, down another 17% in the year coming up. So, and analysts are bringing those estimates down. So I don't love that trend. And that's why it's kind of trading at, it looks like a low multiple, but you, based on forward-looking earnings, you're talking about a mid-teens multiple when things are struggling, right? That's what worries me here. Now, there are some positives to look at. And that is mainly the fact that they had decent profitability, good free cash flow, about $463 million. I like that, although that is very, very volatile. Now, what are they doing with shares? Are they issuing more? Are they buying more back? Yeah, they're buying back shares actually pretty consistently at 152 million shares outstanding in 2011, now down to only 88 million shares outstanding right now. So kind of consistently using that cash flow, not to pay down the debt, but to buy back shares. And so I think that's what's been keeping this stock relatively buoyant. But the chart is okay. It's choppy. It's a volatile name. I don't love that debt level. I don't love the volatility of the earnings. So, you know, I don't think it's terrible. I think it's a fine business. It's just the earnings picture is a little too volatile for me. The debt picture, I think there's a little still too much debt on it. They're repurchasing another 600 million shares of common stock outstanding, which once again, that's good. But you know, if their business doesn't hold up, that could be a terrible thing. It kind of cuts both ways there. So I don't hate it, but I also think there's a lot better places for your capital. So I would be patient on Avnet. Thanks for the call. Now let's take a quick look at the markets today. It was a decidedly positive day overall. And let me pull this up here. It was a positive day on the growth side, at least. On the value side, it was definitely down. Overall, the S&P was actually edged down just a bit. The NASDAQ, that did hold up a bit. And you had some good earnings announcements. Tesla was up once again, even though their earnings report was one of the worst quality earnings reports I've ever seen. Let's see, what else was out there? NIO was up about 5%. And the Trump trade DJT up about 11%. That was a big mover. What were some other? Deckers Outdoors up about 10.5% as we closed the week. Tapestry up 13%. So, you know, kind of a mixed day as we head into next week. We will get the jobs data on Friday. So that will be really the start of, I think, a lot of potential volatility, market gyrations. And then we have the election on the following Tuesday. So only one more full week before we get into election week, and a pretty interesting day to close the week, but kind of mixed overall. Now we're moving to a break. Still to come in this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point. So stay with me, but give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point today is about an allowance. And this is a recent survey by T. Rowe Price. It's their 14th annual Parents, Kids, and Money survey. And we all know that paying an allowance can help kids learn good money habits early on. And 79% of parents say they pay their kid an allowance. Now, the amount varies dramatically. 13% they say they pay $5 or less per week. 22% said $6 to $10 per week. 35% said $11 to $20 per week. 24% said $21 to $50 per week. And only 6% pay more than $51 per week. Now, the reason why they do this, mainly, they want their kids to understand the importance of working to earn money. 59% gave that answer. 35% said they want to teach their kids how to manage their money. So that's the majority of it. 3% say they just want their kids to stop asking them for money. I thought that was pretty funny. And 64% said they require their kids to earn it by doing chores. That's, call it two-thirds. 16% said they don't expect their kids to earn their allowance at all. So that's the vast minority. Now, how much should you pay them? Well, the rule of thumb is $1 to $2 per week based on their age. So if they're five, you know, pay them $5 to $10, right? If they're 10, you pay them $10 to $20, somewhere in there. And stair-step that up, because as they get older, their tastes get more expensive, things they have to pay for, and also they become a little more independent, and so they might need a little bit more money. Another option is to tie it to chores, washing the car, washing dishes, vacuuming, taking care of pets, cleaning their bedroom, etc. That's very common as well. And one of the most important aspects of paying an allowance is really to help kids break down what their goals are, right? Do they want to buy a video game console, a new computer, maybe an outfit, a shirt, sweatshirt, whatever that is, right? They want to go on a trip maybe, they want to go to some camp and that's expensive that they really want to do. Maybe it's a new basketball or new sporting equipment of some kind. And you can help them break down that goal into a perspective of how many chores they need to do, how long it will take them to save it, and then also actually investing that money as well in savings accounts. Now they can actually earn a good amount. And I think one thing that's underappreciated is actually investing in stocks in some way, shape, or form. We've had a sponsor on the show called Greenlight. I think that's a great app for that. You can buy, you can have them give them to charity. You can have them invest in equities. You can have them just save the money and earn interest as well. So there's a lot of ways to go about it through that app. So I think that's a good one. And the main benefit of paying kids allowance is to gain firsthand experience. You know, this is not just concepts you're explaining to them. It's actually setting those goals and making them do it and allow them to do it. Okay. And developing these financial skills will help them become smarter adults. We all kind of know that. It's just, how do you make that happen effectively and encourage them to be financially independent? And, you know, if you actually look at, you know, how many people actually have enough money to save for a $400 emergency, it's a very, very small percentage. And so, you know, this is something that will allow them, I think 37% Americans say they couldn't cover $400 in emergency cash. Think about that, 37, basically over a third of the country. And so this is why it's so important for them to teach them early and give them guidance, right, before it really matters. You don't want to be trying to correct something as an adult. You want to do that early on, just like everything. And money is no different. Now, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of some key benchmarks. So let's do that right now. The two-year treasury yield, 4.07%. That's up from 3.96% last week. So up over 10 basis points. That's a pretty big move in 1 week. And it just shows you that the market is seeing economic data that's still relatively fine, and it's giving pause to an aggressive Fed easing cycle. Not backing off an easing cycle, it's just less aggressive, right? Maybe only doing one more cut this year as opposed to two. And then instead of doing 4 to 5 next year, maybe they're only going to do 2 to 3. Right? And that's kind of what the market is starting to think about, especially as the economy generally holds up. The 10-year also up even more than the 2-year, went from 4.07 to 4.21% on the week. So up 14 basis points. Once again, that 10-year, the longer end of the curve, is starting to move higher, steepening of the curve there. Overall, that's good for the overall economy. Gold, 37.38 an ounce. Sorry, 27.38. I do think at some point I'll get to 37.28, but 27.38 per ounce, up from 27.16. So continuation to the upside there. Silver, 33.59 per ounce. That's up from 33.02 last week. Oil, also up, 71.64 at the close today, up from 69, spot 83 last week. And then national average for gasoline, $3.14, 5% decrease from last week. Pretty big drop in just 1 week. Here in California, though, still averaging $4.60 per gallon. They're moving into a break, but we are still ready for your live calls at 888-99-CHART.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Thomas from Santa Cruz. I'm calling about company CIVI as well as CNQ. I've held both of them in my taxable portfolio for a while. I actually got out of CIVI when it kind of topped a few months ago, if not 6 months ago. I've been looking at it, specifically CIVI, Civitas Resources, and been waiting for it to get to a point where I feel like we can get back in. I think it's about that point. I know it's hit a resistance point around $50. I was wondering if you think this is a good time to get back into CIVI and hold for a long time, as well as if you like one company over the other, or you think, being that one is Canadian and one is American, that it'd be good to have both in the same portfolio. I'll be listening. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, you're looking at two names that we do own for clients, so I'd say both, but they're different names. Now, Civitas, C-I-V-I, is a U.S. name, smaller cap, only about $5 billion. And they're very focused in returning capital to shareholders, one of the reasons we really like them. Now, earnings have come down, but that's kind of the whole industry, right? Oil prices have come down. They're in $13.18 in 2022, supposed to make $8.76 this year. That's up from $7.76 last year. So they have good supply growth. And they're very good at allocating capital to the benefit of shareholders. That's why I really like them. So we do think this is good support here, around $50, high 40s in that range. So I do think that's a good place. Now, it's going to be more volatile because it's a much smaller name and it has a more levered balance sheet than CNQ, which is Canadian Natural Resources. And now Canadian Natural Resources is pretty much the best oil sands name that's out there. And we think they're going to definitely benefit from the new pipeline that was built in Western Canada. And overall, it's just it's a bigger name, right? With a market cap of, hold this up here, of about $75 billion, right? You're talking about a $5 billion name versus a $75 billion name. Obviously, Canadian Natural Resources is much, much more diversified. And it has, once again, stronger balance sheet, stronger cash flow, and is not going to be as levered to the upside of oil. So just a matter of how much risk you want to take, right? Civitas is much higher risk than Canadian Natural Resources, but both are good names. They're good for a portfolio, but you have to understand the difference. Just because they're in the same industry doesn't mean they have to act the same. They can have different characteristics based on their size, diversity, balance sheet, etc. Thanks for the call. Now let's get to another live call. George from Washington State asking about GPN, and he listens via the Invest Talk podcast. George, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, I'm considering to take a small position in it, and I just wonder what your opinion on it is.
Honestly, I think it's relatively cheap. You're looking at GPN, right?
Yeah.
Global Payment
Networks. That was one of the reasons, but I'm kind of more thinking about the mode because the accounting process in that stock, there's a reason why it's a little bit cheap.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that industry is historically low profitability, low margins. The issue with global payments is kind of the debt. The technicals are relatively weak. So, to me, this wouldn't be the time to be getting in, although, you know, I do think it is on the cheaper side, but I wouldn't be buying it here, to say that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate it. I wanted to say you did an awesome job, guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the kind words. Now, let's touch a bit on valuations and interest rates. Now, there is typically a relationship between stock valuations and long-term bond yields. The theory is that stock valuations should be very high when treasury yields are very low, because treasury yields are the discount rate used to run what is called the discounted cash flow analysis, which is discounting the expected future cash flows of an investment. And this typically is especially true when fast-growing tech stocks are viewed as expecting more of the cash flows coming further out into the future than your average stock. That means that the discount rate has more impact because you're discounting that future expected cash flow over many years. And this happened in 2022 when the 10-year went from 1.5% to 3.5% and valuations fell as expected. P's went from 23 on the S&P down to 16. But since then, the 10-year treasury has bounced around between about 3.5% and 5%, and valuations have steadily risen back to the mid-20s. And then once again, bond yields have risen again from 3.6% recently to 4.25% in just 5 weeks. But that hasn't changed anything with valuations. And this is where I have to remind investors that investing isn't just based on one factor. It's a multitude of factors. And especially if you're talking about near-term returns, liquidity matters most of all. And that's probably the best explanation for this, is that yes, rates rose in 2022, but also the Fed was pulling liquidity out of the system because there was just way too much injected in 2020 and 2021. That's what sparked inflation under both the Trump and Biden administration. And you saw the resulting effect. And so the Fed was trying to kill inflation. And so they needed to pull the liquidity out of the system. And so that, along with higher rates, was the catalyst for a contraction in multiples. And so there are some arguments for markets staying at more expensive levels than in the past, mainly due to quality of a lot of the earnings of the top names, you know, the Mag 7 and the like, that these are quality businesses. Not that they can't fall out of bed, but for the most part, they're very quality businesses. So there's argument there. But in general, what has to happen if you're going to get multiple contraction like you saw in 2022 is not just higher rates, but it's also a drop in liquidity. And currently, liquidity is relatively abundant. Now, that can change. And frankly, as we get deeper into next year, the risk of that changing becomes more elevated. Now, I'm not saying you have to have a bad 2025. In fact, I actually think we'll have a pretty decent 2025. I just don't think it's going to be as good as this year, for example. Probably more volatile. Why? Because liquidity conditions will become more challenged. Not challenged, but more challenged, right? This is a very easy, solid liquidity environment, right? The Fed's easing, but I expect that to potentially change by mid-year. And you also have a lot of refinancing later next year and into 2026 that pulls liquidity out of the market. So all of this, all of this is me saying that I think that contraction in multiples is yet to come. And it will take the catalyst of liquidity ebbing further than it has. And in fact, you know, it really hasn't over the past, really since the fall of 2022. That's when in liquidity inflected positively and has continued to inflect positively, especially post the Silicon Valley banking crisis, right? Where the Fed did BTFP, they stopped shrinking the balance sheet. They started issuing on the short end of the curve versus the long end of the curve. All of these were factors that helped keep liquidity abundant. And so yes, rates will matter eventually once liquidity starts to change. Now we've got time, so let me drop another question from our Invest Talk YouTube channel. My Apology says, I love the show. I was hoping you could give me your thoughts on ticker Jobby, J-O-B-Y. I appreciate you guys. Ooh, this is a name that's been in a consistent downtrend ever since it went public back in the fall of 2020, around, say, $10, $11 per share. Now we're down to $5 and change. So down over 50% since then. Now let's take a look at what Jobby does. Well, they develop an all-electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, operate as part of an air taxi service. So the Jetsons, right? This is your narrative stock. This is your, I'll say it, it's a Ponzi name. Right, they're there. They're public to spin a story, and you know they have probably have some prototypes. But when it comes to regulation, you know, is this going to hit the market anytime soon? Very, very, very unlikely. And so what they're doing is just continuing to issue more and more shares. Since they went public, they had 600 million shares outstanding in the fourth quarter of 2021. And now they have 716 million shares outstanding. They continue to issue more and more shares every single quarter. Negative $400 million in free cash flow trailing 12 months. So they're just burning capital. And this is the exact type of name you want to short. You do not want to own this. And I've said this, as interest rates remain elevated, especially these type of names, these are not going to do very well because there are other uses for capital where there people can earn money, right, very easily, and they're not going to want to bet on these type of names. And that's why this continues to just grind lower. And so I know you asked the question, maybe you're a new listener, but these are not the type of names that we think investors need to be focused on now or really ever, right? These are speculative names. These are gambling stocks. And maybe one day the Jetsons will be real, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. And it's pretty clear that this type of technology, while might have some niche applications at some point, I mean, they have them, right? They're helicopters. So I don't really see this as being something that is going to pass muster and become a big business because the regulatory hurdles here, along with technological hurdles, so and safety hurdles and so many other hurdles. So these are the names you want to run from. Now, 2024 is moving fast and the election is just around the corner. And then we will be plowing right into the holiday season. And I hope you know that this is, as we close this year, we're getting to the end, that, you know, 2025 is going to be more challenging. It's going to be different. But there are some secular trends that are continue to emerge. We talked about, you know, secularly high inflation. We have reshoring and manufacturing. You have higher interest rates. And you just have a different environment than post financial crisis. And that means a different level of strategy that you need to bring yourself up to. And that's what we help people do when we do our free portfolio review assessments. And what we do is we go over your portfolio. We will figure out whether you are overweight or underweight the right sectors, right style factors in the market, right asset classes, et cetera, based on your goals, market trends, et cetera. And so it's very helpful for people to really see where they're at. And unless you know where you're at, you don't really know where you're going. And so we talk about that plan and try to find ways to execute that. Either we do it or maybe they continue to do it themselves. And so this is what we do at our company, KPP Financial. We operate with the same philosophy as we do on air, which is independent thinking and shared success. We practice unbiased guidance and parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So you can take advantage of these free portfolio review assessments by heading over to our website, investtalk.com. Click on the portfolio review button in the top right-hand part of the screen and scheduling a phone call or Zoom meeting with me. Now, this is Invest Talk, now with more than 59 million downloads, and our work continues in just 30 seconds. So hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
I had a question today about precious metal, ticker symbol WPM. I've held this stock for about 3 years now, and I'm up about 55%. And it looks like it's about to either break out of its position or maybe all-time high. You could take a look. I think I should trim the position or get out of it and take some profit. Let me know, please. Thank you. Bye.
All right, looking at Wheaton Precious Metals. This is also a name we've owned for some time, and we're up dramatically on. It's at $66.13 today. Let's see, what was it? Down about $1 on the day as Precious Metals did pull back a little bit. They were overbought. So not a shock to see a little bit of consolidation here. But this is an atypical name because it's not just a miner. It's not really a miner. It's actually a streaming company, meaning they buy and purchase agreements for silver and gold from mining company operations. And so what they do is they go in, if a mining company is trying to explore for a new mine, they will go and help finance the exploration and take an equity stake. And that means they get a streaming rights from that as a percentage of the amount of gold and silver that comes out of the ground. And so it's a safer business. It's not quite as volatile, but it's still over the long term, a very, very profitable business. And so we like this name. There's another large one that we own as well. So there's kind of two big ones, and this is one of them. And we still really like wheat and precious metals. It is near an all-time high. Like I said, pulled back a little bit over the past couple of days. But overall, we think this will just continue higher with gold and silver prices. So I see no reason why you want to sell it. And you know, if it's getting too overweight in your portfolio, maybe you trim a little bit. But there's no reason to sell because I think gold and silver still have a lot of room to run from here due to monetary debasement around the world. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal each and every weekday, and it's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, I was calling to ask a question about FNILX. I was looking to invest in it and SCHD, and I was just wondering if I should hold off till the market starts to correct itself. Look forward to your answer. Thanks. Bye.
Well, it kind of depends on your time horizon. I mean, will the market correct itself? It might, but from a lot higher levels, right? I've talked about before that liquidity situation in markets remains relatively robust and likely will keep a major drawdown in equities from happening anytime between now and, say, at least mid-January, maybe through the first quarter. But that's just the likelihood of the situation. Doesn't mean it's guaranteed, but you know, will there be a larger pullback at some point next year? Probably. But once again, it could be from a much higher level. And so, you know, would I hold off? Well, depends on, once again, your time horizon here. Now, if you're looking at these two funds, they're both large cap. The first one was the Fidelity Zero Large Cap Index. So it's an ESG fund. It's been clear that that type of filter is not really a good filter to have. So you know, when I'm talking about building an overall strategy that actually makes money better than other strategies, an ESG strategy isn't the way to go. So from a making money standpoint, no, that's not the way to go. Now, if it makes you feel better, right, because you believe in ESG, then that's another story. But this is not a fund that I would want to own. Now, SCHD, that's a large cap value fund, basically. It's the Schwab U.S. Equity Income Fund. And dividend equity, it's U.S. dividend equity ETF. And it's basically a de facto kind of large / mid-cap value fund. And I kind of like that. And so I don't have any issues with that overall as a broad allocation. Now, it's still underweight some important sectors in my mind. It only has about 1.6% in basic materials. So no real precious metal exposure, which I think is important. No real estate here. So I do think having some real estate exposure would be helpful. Only about 12% in industrials, which is good, but I think that could be improved as well. It does have 12% energy, so I like that. And it's a more underweight technology, only about 10% technology there. So it improves over your average S&P fund, but I think there's more room for improvement. So you want to supplement it with something else, but it would not be FNILX. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's touch a bit on, what did I want to get to? Oh, the bank earnings. Bank earnings came out last week, and there were some interesting takeaways from these reports. Talking about JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo. And they talked a lot about the consumer, and they basically said consumers continue to spend and borrow at a good clip, mainly because the job market is strong, wage growth has outpaced inflation recently, and banks are even more confident than in previous quarters that the trend will continue for some time. A big reason for this, balance sheets. People aren't paying attention to this. The balance sheet of the average consumer is near the best that it's ever been. Now, a lot of this is because of, you know, money that was given out by the government, you know, fixed mortgages at 2.5-3%. There's a lot of reasons for this, but no matter what you think, those are the facts. Those are just straight numbers that you can't argue with. And so, it's really important to understand the context, and that's why consumers are still spending. Now, Citi says it's growing at a moderate pace, and it is different between income groups. So higher income consumers are driving most of the growth here. Once again, those are the ones that have the assets. If you have assets, homes, stocks, et cetera, you have a very strong balance sheet. Your debt is probably locked in at very low rates. And so you continue to spend. Middle-income households are also doing well, but they're being more selective than they have in the recent past. And lower-income consumers are the ones feeling the pressure, mainly because they don't have the assets, right? They're feeling the inflation more, and they're begging for the income growth from their employer, and they don't have anything else to kind of supplement and pay for that inflation. So consumers are shifting away from splurging on travel and things like that and focusing more on food and gasoline. On the credit card side, people are borrowing a bit more. So you're seeing that mixed on the mortgage side. JP Morgan's originations are up, whereas Wells Fargo and Bank of America are down. And the chase for yield is slowing. So less money is going out there and trying to chase those high treasury rates and money market rates than they have been in the past, which is good for banks overall. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. Thank you for listening to this edition of Invest Talk. And we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Remember, we can also help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number by heading over to investtalk.com. Click on the portfolio review button. And this is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.